The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, continuing with Chapter 2, The Status of Knowledge, page 303. Therefore, right thought is a necessary preliminary. And once the habit of right thought is established, free from sense error and desire, and old association, and intellectual prejudgment, the understanding becomes purified and offers no serious obstacle to the farther process of knowledge. Still, right thought only becomes effective when in the purified understanding it is followed by other operations, by vision, by experience, by realization. What are these operations? They are not mere psychological self-analysis and self-observation. Such analysis, such observation are, like the process of right thought, of immense value and practically indispensable. They may even, if rightly pursued, lead to a right thought of considerable power and effectivity. Like intellectual discrimination, by the process of meditative thought, they will have an effect of purification. They will lead to self-knowledge of a certain kind and to the setting right of the disorders of the soul and the heart and even of the disorders of the understanding. Self-knowledge of all kinds is on the straight path to the knowledge of the real self. The Upanishad tells us that the self-existent has so set the doors of the soul that they turn outwards. And most men look outward into the appearances of things. Only the rare soul that is ripe for a calm thought and steady wisdom turns its eye inward, sees the self, and attains to immortality. To this turning of the eye inward, a psychological self-observation and analysis is a great and effective introduction. We can look into the inward of ourselves more easily than we can look into the inward of things external to us, because there, in things outside us, we are, in the first place, embarrassed by the form. And secondly, we have no natural previous experience of that in them, which is other than their physical substance. A purified or tranquilized mind may reflect, or a powerful concentration may discover God in the world, the self in nature, even before it is realized in ourselves. But this is rare and difficult. In one respect, however, it is easier, because in external things we are not so much hampered by the sense of the limited ego as in ourselves. One obstacle to the realization of God is therefore removed. And it is only in ourselves that we can observe and know the process of the self in its becoming, and follow the process by which it draws back into self-being. Therefore, the ancient counsel, "Know thyself," will always stand as the first word that directs us towards the knowledge. Still, psychological self-knowledge is only the experience of the modes of the self. It is not the realization of the self in its pure being. The status of knowledge, then, which yoga envisages, is not merely an intellectual conception or clear discrimination of the truth, nor is it an enlightened psychological experience of the modes of our being. It is a realization, in the full sense of the word. It is the making real to ourselves and in ourselves of the self, the transcendent and universal divine. and it is the subsequent impossibility of viewing the modes of being except in the light of that self and in their true aspect as its flux of becoming. Under the psychical and physical conditions of our world existence. This realization consists of three successive movements. Internal vision, complete internal experience, and identity. This internal vision, Drishti, the power so highly valued by the ancient sages, the power which made a man a rishi or kavi, and no longer a mere thinker, is a sort of light in the soul by which things unseen become as evident and real to it, to the soul and not merely to the intellect, as do things seen to the physical eye. In the physical world, there are always two forms of knowledge, the direct and the indirect. Pratyaksha, of that which is present to the eyes, and paroksha, of that which is remote from and beyond our vision. When the object is beyond our vision, we are necessarily obliged to arrive at an idea of it by inference, imagination, analogy, by hearing the descriptions of others who have seen it, or by studying pictorial or other representations of it, if these are available. By putting together all these aids, we can indeed arrive at a more or less adequate idea or suggestive image of the object. But we do not realize the thing itself. It is not yet to us the grasped reality, but only our conceptual representation of a reality. But once we have seen it with the eyes, for no other sense is adequate, we possess, we realize, it is there secure in our satisfied being, part of ourselves in knowledge. Precisely the same rule holds good of psychical things and of the self. We may hear clear and luminous teachings about the self from philosophers or teachers or from ancient writings. We may, by thought, inference, imagination, analogy, or by any other available means, attempt to form a mental figure or conception of it. We may hold firmly that conception in our mind and fix it by an entire and exclusive concentration. This is the idea of the triple operation of jhana yoga, shravana, manana, nidhyasana, hearing, thinking, or mentalizing, and fixing in concentration. But we have not yet realized it. We have not seen God. It is only when, after long and persistent concentration, or by other means, the veil of the mind is rent or swept aside. Only when a flood of light breaks over the awakened mentality, Jyotirmaya Brahman, and conception gives place to a knowledge vision in which the self is as present, real, concrete, as a physical object to the physical eye, that we possess in knowledge. For we have seen. After that revelation, whatever fadings of the light, whatever periods of darkness may afflict the soul, it can never irretrievably lose what it has once held. The experience is inevitably renewed and must become more frequent till it is constant. When and how soon depends on the devotion and persistence with which we insist on the path and besiege by our will or our love the hidden deity. This inner vision is one form of psychological experience. But the inner experience is not confined to that seeing. Vision only opens. It does not embrace. Just the eye, though it is alone adequate to bring the first sense of realization, has to call in the aid of experience by the touch and other organs of sense before there is an embracing knowledge. So the vision of the self ought to be completed by an experience of it in all our members. Our whole being ought to demand God, and not only our illumined eye of knowledge. For since each principle in us is only a manifestation of the self, each can get back to its reality and have the experience of it. We can have a mental experience of the self and seize as concrete realities all those apparently abstract things that to the mind constitute existence, consciousness, force, delight, and their manifold forms and workings. Thus, the mind is satisfied of God. We can have an emotional experience of the self through love, and through emotional delight, love and delight of the self in us, of the self in the universal, and of the self in all with whom we have relations. Thus, the heart is satisfied of God. We can have an aesthetic experience of the self in beauty, a delight, perception, and taste of the absolute reality, all beautiful, in everything, whether created by ourselves or nature, in its appeal to the aesthetic mind and the senses. Thus, the sense is satisfied of God. We can have even the vital, nervous experience, and practically the physical sense of the self in all life and formation, and in all workings of powers, forces, energies that operate through us or others or in the world. Thus, the life and the body are satisfied of God. All this knowledge and experience are primary means of arriving at and of possessing identity. It is ourself that we see and experience, and therefore vision and experience are incomplete unless they culminate in identity, unless we are able to live in all our being the supreme Vedantic knowledge. He am I. We must not only see God and embrace Him, but become that reality. We must become one with the self in its transcendence of all form and manifestation by the resolution, the sublimation, the escape from itself of ego and all its belongings into that from which they proceed, as well as become the self in all its manifested existences and becomings, one with it in the infinite existence, consciousness, peace, delight, by which it reveals itself in us, and one with it in the action, formation, play of self-conception with which it garbs itself in the world. It is difficult for the modern mind to understand how we can do more than conceive intellectually of the self or of God. But it may borrow some shadow of this vision, experience, and becoming from that inner awakening to nature, which a great English poet has made a reality to the European imagination. If we read the poems in which Wordsworth expressed his realization of nature, we may acquire some distant idea of what realization is. For first, we see that he had the vision of something in the world which is the very self of all things that it contains, a conscious force and presence other than its forms, yet cause of its forms and manifested in them. We perceive that he had not only the vision of this and the joy and peace and universality which its presence brings, but the very sense of it, mental, aesthetic, vital, physical, not only this sense and vision of it in its own being, but in the nearest flower and simplest man and the immobile rock. And finally, that he even occasionally attained to that unity, that becoming the object of his meditation, one phase of which is powerfully and profoundly expressed in the poem, "A Slumber Did My Spirit Seal," where he describes himself as become one in his being with earth, rolled around in its diurnal course with rocks and stones and trees. Exalt this realization to a profounder self than physical nature, and we have the elements of the yogic knowledge. But all this experience is only the vestibule to that supra-sensuous, supramental realization of the transcendent, who is beyond all his aspect, and the final summit of knowledge can only be attained by entering into the superconscient and there merging all other experience into a supernal unity with the ineffable. That is the culmination of all divine knowing. That also is the source of all divine delight and divine living. That status of knowledge is then the aim of this path, and indeed of all paths when pursued to their end, to which intellectual discrimination and conception and all concentration and psychological self-knowledge and all seeking by the heart through love and by the senses through beauty and by the will through power and works and by the soul through peace and joy are only keys, avenues, first approaches and beginnings of the ascent, which we have to use and to follow till the wide and infinite levels are attained and the divine doors swing open into the infinite light. End of chapter 2, The Status of Knowledge, page 307.